To WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, the Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Nothing like live radio. So hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510. We're also on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Each week, Ellen and I are here on this in this beautiful studio. And I have to say, it smells really good.
Yeah, it does.
Whoever does your cleaning here, Paul, they do a good job. Oh, well, tell your wife. We said compliments to her talents, her gifts and abilities. She does a great job. The studio looks great. Look at all our stuff behind Paul, too, you know. And so we show up here every Monday with a fabulous guest. And Ellen, my great co-host, my friend, who answers my phone at all hours of the night and day and my text. We heat up the airwaves with topics that are going around the nation and right here in Brevard County, Florida. And everybody knows I'm the kind of person that if there's a job to be done, Ellen, I try to get it done. And I want to tell our listeners something that I learned at the American Businesswomen's Association, a quote that I heard of one of our friends. Cheryl was one of the speakers on stage, and she said, change the way you look at things, and the way you look at things will change. And you know what? This is what it's all about, right? Having a fun, unscripted show here every Monday and speaking and giving out great information, valuable information to people that tune into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I have friends from all walks of life, and I have to say, one of my friends who I consider very, very dear, capital F with this friend, is Yvonne Mason. And she's here, and Yvonne is an author. She's a designer of purses and clothing. She's an artist. She also is a grandmother with a passion to fight bullying after what happened to her beautiful granddaughter. And, you know, this is what it's all about. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat or independent or who you are. Forget about the labels. At the end of the day, we're all human beings trying to exist on this earthly journey called life. And what do we want at the end of the day? We want to ease the pain and suffering of all people, no matter where they live. But there's only one way we can do that. We have to stay engaged and make sure that you know what's going on in your communities. Make sure you know what's going on with your children. Make sure you know what's going on with people in your family. And Ellen, we were talking about earlier about gun violence. And Yvonne, you made some really good points about responsibility, right?
I did.
And we're all watching every day. It's become like common when there's a shooting, people look at it and they say, oh, there's another one. And then some people say thoughts and prayers doesn't work. Of course, we still pray. But the thing is, it's legislation, right? And Yvonne said it's all about being responsible with your guns. And you said some people think it's hip.
Mm-hmm. It's hip. It's a fad. It's
Whatever. They just think they want to belong, right?
Yep.
And I said that one of the requirements to purchase a rifle, a gun, an assault weapon, whatever it is, it should be, go ask the family members of those people who are applying to buy a gun, and they'll tell you if their brother, sister, Uncle Joe, Uncle Harry, Aunt Mary, should they have a gun or not. Because guess who knows these people better than yourself?
Family.
Family, right? So for our show today, we have a good friend of mine. Her name is Mary, and she's calling in to talk about the assault. I'm sorry, Molly. Molly's calling in. My sister's name is Molly, and I just said Aunt Mary, right? God, it's so easy, two M's. But Molly is a friend of mine. We both are on the League of Women. We're both members of the League of Women. And she is the chairperson for the Justice Committee. She's calling in to talk about some petitions that she's gathering in an effort to get an amendment on the ballot in 2020. She's also a photographer. She's a photojournalist. She is a member of the Brevard County chapter of Moms Demand Action. Molly also serves on the board member as a board member of the Florida chapter for the Brady campaign. Everybody knows Brady. I think he was the aide with President Reagan, right? Am I correct? Am I right about that? My memory is not that great anymore. So anyway, so Molly Dempsey, thank you for calling in, the chairwoman of the Justice Committee for the Nonpartisan League of Women Voters. Thank you for calling in. So to meet my friend Yvonne Mason, and Yvonne says you have to check out some of her books.
Okay. But, okay, will do.
Yeah, because she was gracious enough to help us with sponsoring today's show. So tell us a little bit about yourself really quick before we jump into why the amendment.
I am a mom of two little boys in Brevard County, and I think with everything that's happened, every day makes it more clear that I need to be proactive to help prevent gun violence, because it's more and more taking our youngest and our most vulnerable. And so I have become more active as I have more freedom from, you know, working a day-to-day job. I now give more and more of my time to causes such as preventing gun violence. And I love living in Brevard. Unfortunately, we have a lot of work to do here.
Yeah, you know, we do live in a great county. And it's so, for me, it's when I have to go to an event in the evenings or the night, it is very comforting to know you could leave your home and get from point A to point B and not worry about crime and things like that in Brevard. And I have to say, we do have a great place to live. So it's good to see people like you giving back, you know. So what are you working on now?
Right now, we are collecting petitions to get a constitutional amendment on the Florida ballot for 2020. It prohibits possession of defined assault weapons. So it's the banning of assault weapons. We've had a federal ban on assault weapons in the past. We had one for 10 years. Currently, there are 7 states and the District of Columbia that have similar bans. This is to prevent the type of weapons used in war and the types of weapons that kill en masse when they are used. They are purposely used for mass shootings. It took 32 seconds for a gunman to kill 9 people and injure 27 more in Dayton. Those are odds that we cannot, with a standard gun, we cannot fight against. So we should level the playing field. This is not banning all guns. This is not banning anything except the ones that have 10 or more rounds at a time. And we need close to 1 million signatures to get it on the ballot. But we have, you know, there's a Quinnipiac poll that says Floridians support stricter gun laws. And I think every few days, we're seeing that these mass shootings are happening with these types of weapons, and we can't not do anything anymore. We've done that, and look where it's gotten.
Well, you know, a lot of people thought after Sandy Hook, definitely watching babies being buried or cremated, we definitely thought something would be done then. And I think we have to make it clear that nobody wants to ban the Second Amendment. We're just saying, like my friend Yvonne was saying, be responsible, right?
Right.
And we're saying
red flag laws are, yes, and what you guys are talking about are red flag laws. You know, when someone says, "Hey, my sibling is not capable of being a responsible gun owner," I'm telling you, I know things. I know threats they've made. Those are where the red flag laws come in, and thank God for them. We had those included in the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas bill that passed a couple years ago, last year, and that was one of the only good things that came out of that. But it does. It pulls guns from people who are dangerous, and that it is saving lives.
And universal background checks. I don't think I've met anyone who disagrees with universal background checks that will keep the guns out of the hands of people that should not have them. The key word here is be responsible. And I appreciate what you're doing. So how can we help? Do you have a website for the League of Women Voters that our listeners could check out?
The League is partnering with Ban Assault Weapons Now. They're the group who is putting this on. Ban Assault Weapons Now has a website. It's bawnfl.org, bawnfl.org. You can go there. You can print out the petition. You can sign it and mail it off. You are adding your name to saying, I am not accepting this anymore.
Right. And I think that's the key to it. You know, all mothers and grandmothers and people that care about children. I mean, we carry children for 9 months. Like my mother used to say, you carry them in your womb. And we know how it feels to give birth to a child. I think at the end of the day, all of us, no matter where we come from, what walks of life, we want our children to be responsible. And Ellen was just saying she can't even imagine children going to school anymore and having to do these drills and coming home. A lot of the children are traumatized, having to hide behind their desk, in a closet. I mean, I tell you the truth, we're living in very dangerous times when those of us with moderate voices, not screaming on the left or screaming on the right, but people with common sense need to step up and say, this is how we're going to change policy in the United States. This is how we're going to change things, because in order for that to happen, we have to change ourselves and the way we think.
Right. This is not a partisan issue. This is a safety issue. It's a public health issue. It has nothing to do with Republicans or Democrats.
Right. And I just want our listeners to know that the League of Women Voters is nonpartisan, does not support any political parties or candidate. We take action and we lobby for positions on specific legislation. It's not for women only. And we explore issues from many points, local, state, and national, encourages participation in government, educate citizens about public policies, and we try to improve government through advocacy. So, Molly, thank you so much for calling in, and I'll have you on the show again another time. So, Ellen,
maybe we'll make sure that all of that information hits our Facebook page and our website as well. So, thank you so much for sharing that great information.
Thank you, Miss Molly,
and don't forget to buy Yvonne Mason books.
Yeah,
will do.
All right. She's also a photojournalist, and she I saw something on Facebook where she posted that she was taking a picture for, I think it was the Wall Street Journal or something.
Oh, cool.
Pretty cool stuff,
it
you know. Cool. But, you know, that's the thing. You know, I met somebody at the gym this morning, and she was saying that she's bored and she's divorced, beautiful woman. And I said, why are you so bored? There's so many groups that need help, you know.
Exactly. Find something that you're passionate about.
The Lagoon, teach a child to read.
And Yvonne Mason is sitting here shaking her head going, I don't even know what it feels like to be bored.
So, Yvonne, how was your drive up here from Port St. Lucie?
When you're dealing with stupid people, you just go on autopilot.
Oh, my gosh. The road was bad.
No, it wasn't the road that was bad. It's just a road. It was the people on the road.
Yeah. And how many are still on their phones, even though we have a ban on the texting? I literally saw a trucker cut somebody off when I was going to Fort Lauderdale on Saturday. I was like, dude, you almost slammed into that little matchbox car. What are you doing?
Those things should be outlawed.
I know. Yeah, what? The truckers or the matchbox cars?
No, the matchbox cars.
So Yvonne is here. Oh my God, when you come on the show, it's almost like we don't even have to prepare for anything.
No, we don't.
Because we can talk, like this up in New York, we can talk. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. Bring us up to speed of what you're doing now, because we know Jack passed away.
Yes, it'll be a year and 3 weeks. It'll be a year October the 2nd.
Right, and you started painting and all that. So bring us up to speed what you're doing now.
Okay, let's see. I lost Jack. I lost my mom all within a month, 2 months, 6 weeks of each other. So then I started painting. The radio show's on hiatus. I have parceled out some different slots for other people. I sort of paid that forward so they could run their own shows. It's still under my umbrella, but they run their own shows now, which is great. They set it up and everything. And let's see, I'm traveling. I am so tired. I am the national photographer for the United States JCI Senate. So wherever the president goes, I have to go. In fact, I'm leaving next
Wednesday.
Tell
our listeners what the JC stands for.
The JC stands for the Junior Chamber of Commerce. And any of the folks that are listening that have been around longer than 40 years knows that at one time the JCs were the backbone of communities. They are a service, used to be a service-based organization. My husband was instrumental in getting fluoride in the water in Fort Pierce, St. Lucie County. They were instrumental in building parks for children, for feeding the homeless.
Jack was an activist at a bone.
He was.
Did he ever take a rest?
No.
I mean, it's.
Well, I mean, we get the same blood in our veins. We don't stop.
Yeah. It's like there's something calling your name. People need fluoride in the water. The parks need benches. You need shelters. You need and somebody has to start it. Yeah.
And also, at one time, when the Florida legislature went into session, after they did roll call, whoever did the roll call, I think it was the Speaker of the House, would say anyone who is not or has not been a JC remained seated. There was not an empty seat in the House. And my husband was responsible for electing mayors and governors and senators and sheriffs and anybody that was in an elected office in the state, he helped get them elected.
Yeah, because people, you know, when you talk about him, one word comes to mind is trust.
Very much.
People trusted him and they respected him.
Because he was a man of his word. In fact, there was a story that he used to tell where he wanted to get one of the governors elected, and he happened to be a Republican. Well, my husband was a Democrat, so he changed parties with the idea he would go back to being a Democrat after he got the guy elected. Well, the guy got elected, and he never went back to being a Democrat. And during one of the other elections, someone came up to him and said, "Would you back me and help run my campaign?" He said, "I can't. I've already promised this other person." And the guy said, "Well, they won't care." He said, "No, but I will."
So he was a man of integrity.
Very much.
Which
so.
Nowadays, my gosh, it's almost like, I was talking to someone and I said, it's almost like a couple of things are lacking these days. Integrity.
Character.
Compassion. I mean, what happened to the people who used to care about words? Words do matter.
They do matter.
What you say matters. And you should, like my father used to say, have a still tongue and a wise head. So you should know what you're saying and when you're saying it, how you're saying it, and to whom, and who is your target audience.
And you should also, when one is speaking, one should measure their words to see if they're found wanting. And I read something the other day. It says, it's not our communication that we're lacking, it's the understanding.
Yes.
And we can say things that we mean one way, and the way that we say it, someone else takes it in a totally different direction. Wars have been started because of stupid words. Marriages have been destroyed because of stupid words. Friendships have been lost because of stupid words. And when we learn how to measure our words and understand that what we say matters, and if we say it in our head, or we speak it softly to ourselves and it doesn't sound right, maybe we shouldn't say it.
Right. You know, you all of us, I think, I don't know about everybody, I think when you turn 50, something happens.
I got old.
You got old, right? but then you become so wise and so much bolder. And you could think clearly, and you have all that life experience that you've gathered until this age. You could see things differently.
Yeah, and sadly, young people don't understand that.
They think we're nuts. Because this morning on CNN, I heard one of the, I don't know if it was a senator or the vice president or who it was, or somebody was talking from the Trump administration. They were talking about peace building with the Taliban, and that President Trump was thinking about inviting the Taliban to Camp David. And somebody said, well, no, you can't do that because of 9/11. Have some respect or whatever. But then one other guy says, well, you know, we all want to have, an end to wars. We don't want to fight anymore. We want to make peace. And the difficult thing is making peace. And I thought, and why didn't you all think this way before the wars?
Because wars belong to politicians. That's where they make their money.
Exactly.
The contractors. Every war that has ever been fought has to do with politicians.
So you're saying to rebuild. You break it and then you rebuild it and make a whole ton of money.
Exactly.
And then you have a little lull and then you give people a chance to live and breathe and then you do it again.
And you also got to think about this too, Sita. Our generals.
Coming from you, I mean, I respect you for saying that because, you know, we say that all the time. And it's very rare that people tell you the truth. And that is the truth.
That is the truth.
It's a moneymaker.
Well, in our military they're trained to fight. And if they don't have somebody to fight with, they get bored. Then you have infighting. So there always has to be, if you go back and study history from the beginning of time, if you study history, the Bible tells us there will always be wars and rumors of wars. There will always be a war somewhere because of the human nature of people. If you can't get along, you go shoot them up. I mean, it's just that simple.
But then it's what saddens me is that 20 years after the fact, or 18 years after, now they say, oh, we want to make peace. But hello, wasn't the Taliban the same people that you did not want to have peace with?
They wanted to make peace in Vietnam, too.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And it didn't happen. They wanted to make peace after World War II. Well, we're still fighting with those people, but we're not fighting them with guns. We're fighting them with words and tariffs. And they're fighting us with words and tariffs. So it's...
Why can't we all just get along? Why can't we all just wake up every day and say...
Sita, it would be boring. It would be totally boring.
I know. I mean, you have all these people that sign up to be in the military or to... And God bless them for doing that, right? But then you have others that don't. But they try to change things for those who are fighting the wars. But then you have people that don't speak to their own relatives. They're fighting their own wars in their own houses, in their own communities.
That's my
case. They don't speak to their sisters, their brothers. I mean, you have jealousy and envy and resentment if one sister's kids does well and the others doesn't, or brother. And you know what I find, too? It's but adults as well as children.
And it's human nature.
Well, why do you think we're like that? Why can't... I mean...
Because we're not robots.
But robots will be controlling us soon, I'm telling you.
Maybe.
Or technology.
And all right, if you go into the animal kingdom, if you look at the animal kingdom, the strongest always survive. They have their own wars. You can only have one stallion in a herd because the strongest stallion will run off the other stallions.
So the name of your next book should be Survival of the Fittest, unless you probably already have one to that effect.
It could be. But it is about survival of the fittest.
Yes.
And if one is not strong within themselves and sure of who they are, they'll get swallowed up in the undercurrents of stupidity that runs rampant in our country and around the world.
Yeah, well, we all saw what happened in England with the Brexit. I mean, those guys crossed the floor last minute. Because you know what? At some point, I think human beings do have a heart and a soul. And they know what's right from wrong.
Some,
and they will do it.
Some, not so much.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
It's the 10% that gets the attention.
Yeah.
You know, the 10 or 20% maybe we're at now that get attention that of not being, having good heart.
Yeah.
Kindness in their heart. But I think 80%. I really do. I really think that
80%. I think so,
really
too. I think most
best
people.
Intentions.
Yeah, most people have a good and bad side to them. They know what's good versus evil. And I think if you, sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it to people. You can reach them maybe. And I think the debate they were having on the floor of the parliament, The people were speaking with such passion about, you know, why they should leave and why they shouldn't. And they were able to connect with the other side.
And therein can lie the problem. It is okay to be passionate about something within your life. However, with the background that I have, when one goes in to argue a case in court, a case is not won or lost on passion. It is won or lost on evidence and logic. So if you put passion in there, you lose every time. And that sometimes becomes the flaw of human nature. We do not operate on logic and evidence. We operate on what our feelings are.
Well, that's Ellen's favorite line. She says that all the time. What is
feelings
that line?
Feelings are just feelings.
Well, when emotions are high, intelligence is super low.
That's
there
it.
That's it.
She
it's
says it all.
My favorite line.
Yeah.
And as soon as somebody starts getting angry, I said, this is a time to pause because when emotions are high, intelligence is low, let's revisit. Once
yes.
you're calmed down. Or once
either
I'm
we
calm
walk
down.
Away and forget it. Agree to disagree.
Well, exactly. Well, you know, Ellen, I had to give a shout.
You cannot argue with stupid.
That's so true.
You know what? I have to give a shout out to the American Business Women's Association because I don't know if you joined the one in Fort Pierce as yet, but they had an ABWA Day celebration, and I went. And I tell you, over 50 to 60 women, just all there to talk about small business, opening a business, empowering each other, having commitments and how to keep them. Just these speeches that make you feel like you could take on the world. they encourage you and they teach you how to take the tools that you have and turn it into something. Like we always say, turn your passion into profit. But they go one side step further and help you to analyze and when is the right time for you to open a business or maybe encourage somebody else to open a business, whatever it was. And that's how Ellen and I met because she was a speaker there. And these women, when I left that room Saturday, I felt like I could open another business, take on the world, you know, speak about causes, social justice, whatever it was. They make you feel like you could do that. So we have to give them a shout out today, Miss Ellen.
That's right. They're a fantastic organization.
Right. So I know we want to talk about all the books that Yvonne has written, but, you know, so one of your inspiration, Yvonne, has always been your brother, Stan.
Yes.
And I can't help when I read about Stan, tell our listeners with a couple of minutes we have before we lead into the other segment a little bit about Stan.
Stan is my yardstick because Stanley was born in 1952 when I was 13 months old, and he was labeled as retarded. Now, I know people get offended when they hear that term, but guess what, folks? We all are retarded in some way. His just happened to be a little bit more severe. And he was never supposed to be anything but a vegetable. My brother graduated from high school, started working when he was 7 years old, tossing papers with my younger brother, worked at Publix as a stocker when all he had done had been janitorial work until that point, and flew on an airplane when he was told he never could. So if he can do all of those things and be successful, and his motto is he didn't work for the amount of money he made. He was happy at what he did. So you can make $10 million a year, but if you're unhappy, maybe you need to find another vocation. But he is my yardstick. He is the one that started me on this journey. And then when I married my beautiful man, he became part of the journey. And without them, I would never, ever, ever have attempted to do what I do.
Yeah, well, he gave you that inspiration to move forward with
yes.
writing your books.
Yes.
And you saw his struggles and challenges. And he you know what I like about Stan when you talk about him? He smiled a lot.
He does. Life is fun to him.
Yeah. He was so appreciative.
Very.
That he can do all these things. Well, I think we're going to take maybe a minute break just to catch our breath, and we'll come back with our second segment, and we're going to talk with Yvonne Mason a little bit about her books and which are the new ones and more inspiration for writing.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no-credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. My co-host Ellen Little is here, and she just got some beautiful flowers that were delivered to the studio. So whoever sent the flowers for my friend Ellen, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, we'll all enjoy them for the hour, for the half an hour. Yvonne Mason is here. She's my friend. She's an author. She is an activist to stop bullying here in the United States. She's a painter. She designs handbags and clothing. Anything you want to think about and anything she makes up her mind to do, she'll do it. So this segment we're going to talk about is all the books you're writing. So tell us about your latest adventure.
My latest adventure. Well, I haven't written a lick since my husband got really, really sick and I lost him. However, the last book that I published is called The Mad Hatter. And it's set in England in 1888. We all know what happened in 1888 in England in Whitechapel, but it's not about that. But he does make an appearance. The story is based on historical facts, but it's a historical fiction. And it's about a hat factory set on the Thames River, and the owner of the hat factory is a little whacked in the head because he wants to be the best manufacturer of hats that the England has ever known, but in order to do that he has to use certain skins. And so it kind of gets
certain boring. Skins?
Yes.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
having just been to London and watching all those castles that were dungeons, I can just imagine.
So, I shall not give away the type of skins he uses, but the story became real because everybody that knows me knows I love my hats, and I love the Ripper, and I love Whitechapel. And the best way to put that all down was to write a story with all those factors in it.
So what is your ideal writing space? Like when you're writing The Mad Hatter or Silent Scream or any of these books that you're writing?
My living room.
Your living room.
Yeah, because I throw everything out. Anything that I have to do research on, I have to have it all laid out. Because if I get caught up in a mind-boggling block, or I need a historical fact, or I need a piece of evidence, it's all right there.
Right in the living room.
Right in my living room.
And do you have like any quirky or unique habits when you write? Or just, it has to be a little bit messy? Everything has
It has to be messy.
It has to be messy.
I have organized chaos. But I will not write anything until I've done my homework. I refuse, whether it's just a thriller, I will, if it's, let's say serial killers, because that's who I write about a lot.
Do you scare yourself when you write these books?
Because I scare the people.
Yeah. Because I see you like a Lifetime channel. You know how when you watch a Lifetime movies?
Yeah.
They scare me to death sometimes.
Well, no, I don't scare myself, but I just scare other people because people that don't know me don't understand how I can write what I write. Well, people, my degree's in criminal justice with a side of psychology and serial killers.
Yeah, so you can handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the mind of people. But even in fiction, I do research. I don't just start writing without the basis of a city or a state or even the characters, because my characters I pull from real life people. Many real life people that I have been pissed off at have died in my book.
So Ellen, she could be looking at us and she could be thinking
about
book.
No, I think we're
book.
Safe. Yeah, okay, you're safe.
When I say you're on my list, people go, oh, I finally made your list. Yeah. Which book do I die in this week?
Right.
Well, you know, a lot of people use their environment and their upbringing when they're writing a book. Did you have to use any part of your environment and upbringing to write other books?
No, but I use my daughter's upbringing, or her lack thereof, or her bad decisions to write Tangled Minds.
Her daughter's bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she read the book. She said, Mama, you wrote about me, but I wasn't quite that bad. I said, no, but you were close. And there are real places in that book. Scottsboro, Alabama's in that book. Commerce, Georgia's in that book. And there, when people read that book, they know those places that I speak about. because those places are very familiar to me.
Where's that book set at, the one?
It's set in Commerce, Georgia, and in Scottsboro, Alabama.
Oh, so yeah. So he, and your daughter lives in Georgia.
She lives in Georgia.
So she knows who you're
she
talking
said, oh,
about.
Oh, yeah, you were writing about me. I said, yeah, well.
So like, so what are some, give our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Sometimes I say my name, and it's like, oh, it's a nice name. Some interesting facts about some of your books. We know Silent Scream.
Silent Scream. Everybody knows. Yes, it's been on TV 4 times. There is another book called The Last Rites. It is another true crime that took place. The murder took place in Fort Pierce, but the girl was picked up on US 1 coming out of Melbourne. She was hitchhiking. And 3 gentlemen picked her up, took her to Fort Pierce, which was still remote in 1983, and raped and executed her. And she was listed as a Jane Doe for a year before anybody could figure out who she was. And a friend of my husband's, who was with FDLE, worked that case. And she's buried in Fort Pierce. And for many, many years, there was no tombstone. So when I wrote the book, her daughter in New York, who she had left in New York when she was a baby, contacted me, and I told her where her mother was and why I wrote the book. And we were getting ready to do a massive sale on the book so we could get up enough money to buy this woman a tombstone, because it was an unmarked grave. And her daughter, finally finding where her mother was buried, put a tombstone there for her. Her name was Pauline Miller.
Wow. Interesting. That's something. I mean, you can't, people don't know these things about the authors, you know, like how you impact other people.
And it does. It is very, it did, again, until someone reads books by authors, you're right, they don't know how they're impacted. The other true crime is Justice for Cindy. That one took place in the city of Oregon, outside of Portland. I mean, the state of Oregon, outside of Portland.
Now, and she,
Oregon,
and you have a lot of material, because every day there's a crime
somewhere. But the Oregon has one of the most liberal criminal. You want to talk about liberalism? They have one of the most liberal criminal justice laws in the state, in the United States. The gentleman that killed his wife in her sleep and cut her body up into 6 pieces and tossed her in the Columbia River only got 20 years, and then got out for good behavior.
Ugh.
And when he got out for good behavior, he proceeded to sexually assault his granddaughter and her cousin.
So he's locked up again, I hope.
But he's getting out in 2 years.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. Have you done the research on the one where the woman was kidnapped and it took the baby out of her?
Have not done that research.
You know which one I'm talking about? I think it's in Chicago.
Yeah,
I can't even say it. When you think about how they took that baby, and now I read this morning that the father is being sent all these hospital bills, although the mother is dead and the baby survived after that attack, he has to pay all the medical bills. I'm like, why?
He shouldn't have to pay them.
He
shouldn't. Didn't do the crime.
Right. So here's the thing. So when you're writing your book, tell me, what famous family or friend do you think about when you're writing your books? Are there people that are famous in your family, or maybe an actor, an actress, or somebody that you say, I'm going to put in this book?
The book, A Voice from the Grave, was taken not from family or friends, even though I did have family that was in the Civil War, but it was taken from 3 women who fought as men and were prisoners at Andersonville. No one knew they were women until they died. And when prisoners died, they buried them without any clothes because they needed to recycle the clothes. 2 of the women they identified, but one of the women still remains as an unknown. So I gave her a name in the book.
You did?
I did.
Oh, I wonder if it was Ellen or Sita. So, Yvonne Mason, you do a lot of fun stuff. What are some of the things that you do that they're hidden talents that no one knows about as yet, but you know about it, and it's coming up in a project?
Oh, dear. What am I going to get ready? Oh, I'm getting ready to.
I know.
There's
I knew
always
that
something,
was a good
yeah.
question.
I am flying out to Kansas City next Wednesday for the National JCI Senate meeting, because I have, for my president, and I have to be there too. But in the midst of all of that, I am involved in my first art show.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Oh, I'm telling you, she's going to benefit from ABWA, and we'll have to invite her when we have a meeting.
I am taking prints of my artwork, I'm taking some originals, and I am taking some of my photographs to sell.
So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you and see all the... You've written how many books?
17
books, your artwork. Are you still doing the clothing line?
I have not done anything with it for a while. I'm traveling so much, I don't even know what day is it.
It's Monday. We know it's Monday because that's the only day that
it's Monday, September 9th.
I don't even know what day it is.
It's Monday, September 9th. It's my son BJ's birthday. So happy birthday, BJ.
I come in one day. I have a spare bedroom that's also my radio studio, and it has a day bed on it. Well, on this day bed is all these clothes, and I don't normally do that. My clothes are always put away, but I have a suitcase, and that suitcase stays packed. I take out the dirty clothes. When I come home, I throw them in the wash. I hang them up. I go back in and I rearrange the suitcase because I'm always on the road again.
Yeah.
And until I'm not on the road again anymore, I'm limited as to what I can do.
You know, when I look at you, Yvonne Mason, you are not just surviving in this on this earthly vacation called life. You're living.
Yes, I am.
You are living. Because,
well, I made Jack a promise.
Yeah. All of us, we want to be... And Yvonne Mason, where we can take our talents, whatever we have that we could use our hands, our brain, our creative side, and we want to do something. And every time I look on Facebook, I'm like, okay, she's gone again. She's gone again. She's gone again. And then I try to book you for the show, and I'm like, I can't. I'm doing this. And I'm like, this woman loves life. And it doesn't matter what God has thrown her way, she survives. And you're up again.
I'm up again.
And but how do you do it? What's your secret?
I am a genealogist, and I have done genealogy for the last almost 40 years. And as I look back and look at the women that are my ancestors, and my ancestors came from Ireland and Scotland for the most part, they had to be strong women to survive those barren, rough countries.
The Renaissance period.
So
no wonder she likes hats and boots and things like that.
When I look at these women and I see their history and what they had to put up with in the history of the times and everything that happened, and it was the women that fought. It was the women that didn't put up with any of the BS. It was the women that survived. How can I disrespect the women
that moved on, that kept moving forward,
right? That are my ancestors. They left me a legacy.
Yes, yes.
And I made Jack a promise that I would keep living, because he knew if I didn't make that promise, I'd probably crawl up in a hole somewhere and die. But the women in our family and in our heritage, they survived so many.
Yeah,
things.
They didn't give up.
No,
they kept. So what's the website? Is it one website that they could find everything on, or you have various ones?
I've got various. If they pull up Fine Art America and type in Yvonne Sewell, because my art is under Yvonne Sewell, if they type in Yvonne Sewell, they'll find my artwork. They go on Amazon and look up Yvonne Mason, they'll find my books. If they go on Vita.com and look up Yvonne Mason, they find my clothing line. If they go on Facebook and look up Yvonne Mason, photography and artwork by Yvonne Sewell, look up Yvonne Sewell. I am everywhere. Yes,
17 books.
And one of the things that I love about the clothing line specifically is all from your photography.
Yes, it is.
That's how you got, and I love the stuff.
The vibrant colors.
Oh, it's amazing.
Purple.
We got
she
purses,
loves purple, and I love
right?
purple.
You got your purse.
Yeah.
You got a gift of your purse.
I do.
A gift of my
actually,
purse.
I think my daughter borrowed it and it probably stayed there.
You I was just going to say. I was going to say, well, that's gone.
Yeah. So, Yvonne, what is your, I mean, it's hard for someone who's done so much to say, well, what's my best accomplishment? But what would you say is your best accomplishment?
Marrying my beautiful man.
Jack. Oh, wow. Well, you know, and he did, he left and, I mean, you took such good care of him. I mean, you made a believer out. I mean, in your last segment, there were so many people who had said to me, she took care of him by herself at home.
I did.
And you did all, you're a research person. You
yes.
did your research and you got the lift, the hospital bed. You made sure that he died with dignity and free of pain in his beautiful surroundings.
The hardest thing that I have ever done is the night he was dying. I asked him, because he was in a lot of pain then, I said, do you want me to transport you? And he said, no. I said, okay. Well, at 6 o'clock on Monday morning, on Tuesday morning, he was in so much pain. I said, look, I don't have the medicine to ease your pain. I have to take you to the hospital. I don't want to. I know you don't want to go. But I promised you I would not let you suffer. So I transported him, and the ER doctor told me, I already knew that he was dying because his kidneys had already failed. He had the odor of death, and any of you know what that odor smells like.
Oh, yes.
And so when the ER doctor came in, he said, he's got an infection. We knew he had sepsis. He says he's got an infection. His kidneys are gone. His liver's gone. He had congestive heart failure. His lungs were, everything was shutting down. Because I told him the night before when he said, I'm in trouble, aren't I? And I said, yes, honey, you can go anytime you want to. Your journey on this earth is about done.
Yeah.
So when I got him to the hospital, he said, what would you like us to do? And I said, what do you mean? What do you want me? What do I want you to do? He said, well, most families want us to. I said, stop right there. And I've already had the conversation. I want him made comfortable so that he can go to sleep.
Isn't that the makings of a book, The Odor of Death? I mean, you know, that's how authors think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all three of us have written books. But that's that one sentence, you could write an entire book about his life and and death at the same time.
But I promised him that he would die with dignity. I promised him that he would die with no pain. And when I told the doctor that, he looked at me and he said, you are the only family member that has come through to ever say that to me. I said, what are you talking about? He said, most of them say, do whatever you can to keep him alive. I said, no, that is cruel. That is unusual.
It's inhumane.
And it is inhumane.
Well, you know, a lot of people say that, but they don't understand when the body is ready to go.
It will go.
And they force the body to stay alive with the feeding tubes and hooked up to tubes, IVs and G-tubes and all that in the ICU.
And it's wrong.
And sometimes I wonder if these families had a good relationship with the person who was ill, because the way the person is suffering, sometimes we put our pets down.
But we don't allow people to die with dignity.
Yes, we don't. And I'm not sure what the answer is to that. It has to be maybe they do truly love somebody and they don't want to let them go. Or it's just that maybe people just don't understand the death and dying process.
It's selfishness.
Yes.
Because the greatest love that someone has is A, to lay down their life for a friend, and B, to allow someone they love to go, because that person will not go until they know it's okay.
Now, to just kind of change the topic quickly, what's going on with your daughter? And I know you did lose your grandchild.
I did.
And from the bullying and all that, is she doing anything with that?
My granddaughter is now out of school. She graduated. She changed her mind about going into the service. She is now working. She has found her voice. In fact, her senior year, she was on the bus and she was being... Now, this is the granddaughter that's alive. The granddaughter that we lost, we're not doing anything with that, but the granddaughter that's still alive learned from her sister, and she was being bullied by a young man. The oldest granddaughter was in ROTC, and she kept telling him to leave her alone, and he wouldn't do it, so... She took him out on the bus, and the school threatened to kick her off the bus, and her ROTC lieutenant threatened to pull her rank. And when I got through with him, they said, no, ma'am, we will do neither. Because I called him up. I said, you go ahead, and you kick her off the bus, and I've been instructed by my beautiful man that there will be a limo at her house every day to pick her up and take her to school and to pick her up and take her home. And I told the LT, I said, understand, you trained her to be a soldier and to defend herself. That is what she was doing. He slapped her.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was reading something where a child wanted to have a T-shirt with the name of his, whichever football team he supports, whatever university. And he just put a piece of paper on his T-shirt, and he went to school. And the kids were making fun of him. And his teacher wrote a letter to that particular university and told them the story. And they adopted this design on this T-shirt.
Yes. University of Tennessee. Yes.
And the T-shirt sold out.
And so I thought, what a beautiful way to pay tribute to this child who he was in tears. He was crying because his classmates were laughing at him because he had the orange T-shirt, but he didn't have a way of putting the logo on it that said University of Tennessee. You saw that.
I saw that.
That came up on Facebook this morning. And I thought about you, and I said, oh, I have to bring that up on the show.
The thing is, with children who bully, if you look into their background and you look into their environment, they are bullied at home. And it has become a generational thing. Either and if they're, not only are they bullied, but their mother is probably being abused. So you have to go back to the core of where the bullying came from. And when people learn to stand up to bullies, they take that power away from them.
Yeah, it's a way of life for some people.
It is.
In their homes, and their communities, the way they talk to their coworkers, road rage. It all stems from all of that.
It all stems from, I don't feel good about myself, so I'm going to make you not feel good about yourself. Well, now is the time to stop that generational bullying and understand the core and just be kind.
Yeah. So when you're writing your books, what are some of the strangest things you've ever had to research to do your book, to write a book?
Of course, if we know. I will tell the plot of the story of the matter.
I mean, you have to on all these people who are dead in such gruesome manner by men that they knew, people that were their relatives. But
we didn't bring up the fact that you spent some time as a bounty hunter.
No, we did not.
We did not. So part of that, the bounty hunter time, was what you said, along with your brother and Jack, of course, all inspired you to do that.
A bounty hunter.
But I can only imagine what the bounty hunter position
did. I loved it. I would go back to it
tomorrow. She's brave. And folks at home, she is a slight woman, but she is fierce inside.
And I know you can. And I know you have a license to carry a gun. So bounty hunter, you are carrying a gun with you. I'm glad you do. If you do.
Now I carry a 3-foot wooden billy stick in my truck.
Yeah. rest assured, she can do much more damage.
She can carry a horse whip.
I don't need a gun because I was trained in martial arts, and if somebody gets that close enough to me, I can take them out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No big deal.
Well, I'm glad. Well, I hope nobody hurts you because you will handle them well.
This is what I tell my mother. You can only kill me once, but before you do, you will wish you had never been born.
So, Yvonne Mason, author and jack of all trades, no pun intended, jack of all trades you are. And dear Jack, wherever you are, she's here with us listening. If you were stranded on an island, which three people would you want there with you and why?
They say
you should ask famous people these questions, and you are famous in my eyes.
My beautiful man.
Mm-hmm.
My lord, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Really? Why Edgar Allan Poe?
Because he was the first horror writer I ever read as a 10-year-old, and I loved him.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Not much of an impact.
Yes.
I know he just did horrors, or he did poems too?
Well, some of his poems were horrors. The Raven.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I remember him, right? I remember that
poem. The House of Usher was the first horror movie with Vincent Price ever went to see.
Well, you know, my husband likes Hafez. And Hafez, the poet in the Middle East, Persian. And yesterday, we've had this piece in our house for like 10 years, maybe more. And I said to him last night, I go, this is so beautiful. It's a tomb. I always assumed it was somebody else's tomb. And he says, no, that's a replica of Hafez's tomb. And I looked at it, and there's steps all around, and there's a little casket in the middle, and it's such a beautiful piece of artwork. And I said to him, you know what that signifies to me? That the best and the brightest, the greatest, they all have to go at one point. And he says, you know, that's right there, that tomb, that piece of artwork is life itself.
None of us get out alive.
That's right.
That's right. One so group that we're always going to be part of.
Yeah.
So the elderly at some point.
Oh my
God. We're all going
to die. You know what? I just ask is for more people in the United States to become more compassionate, because when you take care of the elderly and the sick and the needy, that's blessings that you're going to get for when your turn comes. And oftentimes you hear people say, well, I don't want to pay taxes for education because I don't have children in school. Well, guess what? You need somebody educated to draw your blood.
That's
You need somebody to put in your IV. You need somebody to drive your car and take you to the bank and have a banker that knows how to
count. Somebody paid for them to go to school.
Why? But Yvonne, with the few minutes left, why do you think people have become so self-absorbed and they just don't care anymore?
Because they have forgotten about the two greatest commandments. Love the Lord with all of your heart, mind, body, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah, I mean, but how do we bring it back? I mean, because I read something on Facebook this morning. It says, I prefer the people who use their hands for actions than those who use their mouth to pray. Because you could pray, but you're not having the action. How can you do both? You should be
you
able
should,
to do both.
But see, we cannot change the whole world, but we can change how we feel about the whole world. And we can change one person at a time by how we change our attitude.
So it's all about attitude.
Attitude.
I guess that's
and lead by example.
Yep.
Well, you know, that's what when Cheryl, who gave that speech at ABWA, said, change the way you look at things. And the way you look at things will change. And that is so true. You could look at a flower that's wilting and say, oh my God, that flower needs some water and it's dying. Or you could say, well, if I water it, it's going to come back to life, right?
It's all about the attitude. So it's all about perspective.
So give us the website one more time for your 17 books so that our friend Molly can check it out.
Pull up Yvonne Mason on Amazon. Pull up Fine Art America and look for Yvonne Sewell for my artwork. Pull up Vita.com for Yvonne Mason. And just look up Yvonne Mason all over the place because I'm there.
Yep, she is everywhere.
I know, and you know what? When I met Yvonne, she was wearing a hat. She was in full character form then. And to see her now, I mean, you look much younger than last time. Don't you think, Ellen, with the blonde hair and everything?
It's the boots, I'm telling you.
It's the boots?
It's totally the boots.
The sexy boots. Hey, you're never too old to show off what you got.
You never.
You know what? I believe in wearing my lipstick. I think it makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. I told my husband two things I want to carry on with this life of mine. Hair coloring, eyeliner, and lipstick. The rest I could do without. Because when you look good, you feel good.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, I have posted all of Yvonne's website information on our post as well and on our Facebook page. So hopefully everyone will connect and buy your books and find out what a fantastic person you are.
And you know, Al, we need
to, we already know.
I want to apologize to the people that went to our website and could not
play
our shows. We're sorry, but Ellen did fix it this morning. You know, thank you, Paul, for giving us the opportunity. Freedom of speech does come with a responsibility, and we love coming into our studio and bringing our wonderful friends like Yvonne Mason and Molly Dempsey and all these people come in. It's great.
Yes.
And take us away, Al.
Check us out on CETAMediaInc.com and also on our Facebook page, CETA Media. And we will see you next week for another fantastic viewpoint.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, Merritt Island, FM 94.7.
You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.